BBC World Service. We continue now with Peter Jones as he presents part 7 of the history of radio comedy. So, on with the Motley.
January 1952, and that was Harry Secombe singing in the very first series of The Goon Show, an anti-establishment show which, over a decade, became part of the British establishment, played by four newly demobilized individualists, each with his own gift of comedy and a memory of a very recent war. Had there been no war, Harry Secombe would probably still be a tea boy to this day.
I was a pay clerk, oh yes. I went to this office having got the job as a junior pay clerk, thinking that I was in a great position here, you know. And the first thing I'd thrust at me was an old teapot, and I had to make tea. So I thought, well, if I could make tea and make some money out of it. I was making more money on the tea than I was making on the... what's the name? I branched out. I had people working for me in odd offices up and down Wine Street.
But Harry hadn't reckoned on Adolf Hitler and found himself in North Africa fighting a war, among other things.
We're positioned in North Africa, up on a plateau near the Shawash Valley. I've got a memory for names, you know. I don't know what it was, but it was called the Shawash Valley. And there was this plateau thing, and we couldn't get the Germans out of these hills. We kept sending them letters, but they wouldn't go, you know. Come out, they wouldn't. So they sent for these big guns. I was 25 pounder regiment, by the way, artillery. You know, they five-mile snipers, they called us. I had to lead retreats, you know. I was wearing my uniform back to front. Well, I was advancing, but I was making for the nappy. We had these gun pits they dug, you see. Our gun pits weren't big enough for this big 7.2 gun howitzer they sent up for Algiers to get the Germans out, you know, make a big visiting card. So they came in at what's called a night occupation, and they went in the gun pit we dug for them, and they went in on the top of this plateau. And I was in a command post at the bottom of a 150-foot cliff here. So anyway, they fired this first round with this big gun at night, and the sergeant said, fire, pull the lanyard away, sir, and the gun had gone. This huge gun had jumped out of the gun pit, and it came clattering over where we were and missed us by a few yards, you know, in this little truck. And I thought, they're throwing guns at us. So nobody knew what had happened, you see. So the next thing we knew, the back of the truck parted the canopy, and a face came through. Anybody seen a gun? And it was Milligan, because he was on the crew of the gun, and he says he's still paying for it.
Little did Secombe and Milligan realize that that meeting was to inspire the pair of them to make scenes like this many years later.
What are you doing down here?
Everybody got to be somewhere.
Yes, but who are you?
Oh, the hard ones first, eh?
And when the war was over, they met again, first in Italy, where Spike had been blown up in action. They were waiting to be demobilized and get back home to try their newfound talents.
Well, I met him later in Italy, where we were on a thing called Settled Pool of Artists outside Naples, and I met him there, and we had this marvelous reunion. You know, this terrible sense of humor that nobody else really understood. Yeah. And we did a show called Over the Page. Terrible it was. We used to get hysterical. And when I came out of the army, I went to the Wimble Theatre, where I met Mike Benteen. He was half of an act called Sherwood and Forrest. And I introduced Spike to Mike. And then later we met Peter, and that's how it all started.
The fourth member of the Goon Show team was Michael Benteen. An ex-Royal Air Force officer, he'd already established himself on stage as a highly creative original clown using the back of a chair, a sink pump, and a vacuum cleaner to illustrate his stirring calls to the nation.
We'd all known one another at the windmill. I mean, Spike did an audition there with the Bill Hall Trio, where she played guitar. And Harry had already appeared at the Windmill. And we naturally gravitated. We got the same sense of humor, so we gravitated together. Yes, we were called the Junior Crazy Gang. It shows you how long ago it was.
The Junior Crazy Gang. The Goons hated the title, and so did their young producer, who incidentally is now the old producer, Dennis Mayne Wilson, who is writing and compiling this series of radio programs. Like the Goons, it can also be said of him that he was, and still is, either mad or both.
And thank you, Peter Jones. Well, I don't know about the both, but when we first tried to get the Goon Show on the air, we must have seemed a pretty wild lot. Remember, we were all ex-servicemen, and we were only in our mid-20s. We were busting with enthusiasm and a pent-up release of energy from all the blooming petty officialdom of 5 years of war. And we had the feeling that in a balmy world, we were the only sane ones left. We wanted to get away from all the old conventional shows. Our ideas were wild, pure radio. Didn't want to do ex-music hall jokes. We did things like, there's a North Pole and a South Pole, so logically there's got to be an East Pole and a West Pole. So we did the voyage of discovery to the East Pole. We launched the new 85,000-ton luxury liner Goonitania in its 86,000-ton glass bottle. The BBC hierarchy weren't very impressed at first. We argued with them for 2 years, and that's a lifetime when you're only in your 20s. What's all this about a go-on show, somebody was heard to say. But eventually a senior producer friend of mine, Pat Dixon, persuaded the powers that be to give us a break. But they still wouldn't let us call it the Goon Show. Nobody would know who the Goons were, they said. Well, they soon found out. The atmosphere in the studio on those Sunday nights was electric. And not only the comedy. All the Goons were full of musical talent. Peter Sellers on drums, Spike on trumpet, Seacombe the voice. And they used to stay on the stage to swing with our backing groups, Ray Ellington and Max Geldry. Even in those early experimental days, the shows explored wild flights of comedy fantasy. And inspired by Spike Milligan, it was the Goons who began to exploit the mad world of sound effects and use radio as a new medium.
Now, gentlemen, this new excavator of mine will move 30 tons of earth in exactly 1 minute.
That's impossible.
That's impossible. No, no, not. I'll prove it. I'll time it you to the very, very exact second with my wristwatch. Ready? Go.
Excavator I've ever heard.
Excavator? That was my wristwatch.
From those early primitive days, the Goon Show made its impact with a whole new approach to comedy, and indeed to British comedy in all the arts, film, television, and the theatre. No Goon Show, no Monty Python. No Goon Show, no I'm Sorry I'll Read That Again. And no Kenneth Williams and Kenneth Horne in, naturally, Round the Horn. It was free form, abstract, aggressive, politically aware, and with four highly charged creative individualists, it wasn't always easy, as Harry Seacombe, now Sir Harry, remembers.
Originally, as you've already mentioned the program, Mike Benteen and Spike and Peter, and there were four of us to start with. But the trouble was that Mike, Peter, myself, and Spike would all sit around cracking gags and making up programs. This is before the Goon Show ever started, throwing ideas around. And the result was an amalgam of all our ideas, mostly Spike's and a lot of Mike's. And when it eventually came to doing the show, the first shows were a bit of an incoherent mess. You know, they were fun, but they were a lot of enthusiasm, but very little expertise. And we'd have a sort of session and Spike and Mike would spark each other off And at the end of the session, both of them would go away thinking that most of the ideas were theirs. I mean, Spike would think that that idea is mine, and Mike would think it was his. So there was always a little bit of friction in that respect. Each one accusing the other of plagiarism, not seriously. But that disappeared when Mike decided that he wanted his Sundays to the family, which is fair enough to spell this family, and left. And then afterwards, I was out of these things because I lived south of the river, down in Keene. And Spike and Peter lived in the same block of flats at one time in Shepherd's Hill, in Highgate. And being in such close proximity, obviously, even the best of friends have an argument now and again. And when Peter Eaton was doing the show, he'd ring me in the week and say, there's been a bit of an argument. Get there early on Sunday, so if there's any trouble, you know, we can be there to sort of smooth things over. And there never really was much trouble on the actual day of the program, because if Peter had a touch of the sulks, and Spike would go into the adopt the fetal position, I'd think of some army joke I'd heard, and they'd within a few minutes all break up and all be laughing. So it was quite, and of course the brandy helped. My God, the brandy helped.
And not only the brandy, as you'll hear. Sorry not to have kept you up to date with the news, but the Goon Show, for better or for worse, did drive a coach and horses through all the conventions at the BBC, I'm glad to say.
I do feel that we honestly did set the trend for a new form of humour. Remember when we first met up, we all of us, Benteen, Mike Benteen, Harry, Spike and I, had this feeling that we had to do something. We had this thing inside us, we wanted to express ourselves.
As Peter Sellers said of those early days, to bring you back to sanity, it's now 1953. The war has been over now for 8 years. And good news, tea has just been taken off the ration. Britain has just exploded her first atom bomb, and sweets and eggs are no longer rationed. In the Korean War, there are 1.5 million soldiers dead, wounded, or missing. Hillary and Sherpa Tensing have just scaled Mount Everest. Hard luck. The Goon Show got there on radio a month before. England have just regained the ashes from Australia for the first time in 20 years, but Hungary beats England 6-3 in the Football Cup at Wembley. The first time ever that the Brits have been humiliated in their national pastime. And a few months later, in 1954, the good news. All food in Britain has ceased to be rationed. The war has only been over for 9 years. Why on earth did we bother? The bad news. America has just exploded the first hydrogen bomb. No wonder we need a Goon Show.
You rotten swine, you! You have bitten me before we even started the game.
The BBC did, of course, do other shows. Well, the Goon Show wasn't exactly greeted with enthusiasm by the British public, not for the first few years, anyway. But you couldn't get away from their talents. Individually, they turned up everywhere. Harry Secombe followed Tony Hancock into educating Archie.
Mr. Harold Secombe, your trustworthy travelling salesman. Bringing you your new electric chimney sweeper. No more black hands, no more black faces, no more soot, and in many cases, no more chimney.
Harold!
When I finish cleaning your chimney, it will be so clean you'll be able to eat your breakfast in it.
But Harold, your mouth and your hands, they're black.
My last client insisted I had breakfast in it. Silly fool. He got on the roof and lowered me down a cup of coffee.
Yeah, and then some bacon and egg.
Oh, no.
Well, yep. And all I can say is you're wearing a very small yellow beret.
Yep. Yellow beret?
Yes, with bacon ear flaps.
Oh. The fool, the absolute fool. Agatha, do you remember I was taking you out to lunch?
Yes, I'm ready.
Good. Well, I'll kneel down. You get a knife and fork. This is it.
No.
No, Agatha, please, don't dash away like that. I didn't mean it. Say something nice to me, Agatha. Please don't stand there silent. Say something. I was ribbing you, Agatha. Please forgive me. Agatha, you can't leave me like this. Say something.
Bacon bonce.
But all of them were left in the shade by the chameleon-like vocal, almost uncanny genius of Peter Sellers, who sometimes appeared in as many as 8 radio shows a week, except you'd never know. Is this Jimmy Stewart from Hollywood, or is it Peter Sellers in Ted Ray time?
Greetings, Buster. Glad to have you know me.
An American? What are you doing here?
Well, Buster, I have to inform you that this property has been requisitioned by the United States Air Force.
Is that so?
Yeah, that is so. Oh, yes, indeed. We're right on the ball, you know. Oh, yes. Matter of fact, if you hadn't reopened your parliament last week, we were taking it over as a cinema, you know that?
I have never heard of anything so fantastic as that.
Yeah. You know this 3D?
Oh, yes, that's a wonderful thing.
Oh, yes, but that's all gone now, you know.
Really?
Oh, that's right out. That's all stuff now. Thing of the past. The latest thing we have is 4D.
4D?
Oh, yes.
But 3D is wonderful. The actors seem to hit out at the audience.
That is true, but with 4D, the audience can hit right back again. Don't worry, though, Buster. Keep trying. You English will get there yet. Oh.
The Goon Show carried on, of course, but in their own surreal fantasy world of radio. There were no voluptuous ladies in naughty knickers or glamorous girls with mountainous bosoms, but Peter Sellers knows that radio imagination can be much sexier than any film or television. Here he is about to seduce Kitty Blewett, playing the wife in Raise a Laugh.
Well, hello there. My name is Al K. Trask. Give us a big hello, baby. I'm hot tonight, and I'm coming right in on the beam. Oh,
well.
Wow.
Won't you come straight in? Tell me, are you from the escort service?
You are cooking with gas and right on the front burner. Honey, you are strictly swoon fodder, you are.
Look, far be it from me to intrude, but when you start talking in English, let me know, will you?
Who is the gray-haired old creep with the oversized head handles?
That happens to be my husband.
Ah, glad to have you know me, sir. Well, how about it, baby? Let's get smoochy.
Let's do that.
Let's get smoochy? Now, just a minute, you overdressed college boy.
College boy? Do you know anyone who went to Harvard?
No, but I know a Swede named Jensen who got 3 months in Yale.
3 months in Yale?
Apart from conventional comedy, the goons get their own back on the Hungarians for daring to beat us in our own national game. We shall never be beaten again. Spike Milligan has invented the explodable football boot.
Come in.
Captain Harry Siegel reporting for duty as instructed, sir. I'm ready to die for the flag, bleed for my country, suffer great sufferings, and all for England!
You silly twisted boy, you. Pull up a chair.
Thank you.
During the last 18 months, you may have noticed that throughout the civilized world and America, British prestige has fallen very low. Yes?
Yes.
And do you know why?
Yes. I don't know why.
I'll tell you. Pull up a chair.
Thank you.
One thing killed Britain. And that was our defeat by the Hungarian football team.
Yes.
I fear those Magyars did for us, lad. Before they play us again, we must make absolutely sure they don't win.
Does this mean
sabotage? You may well ask that.
I did ask it, Will.
I suppose you did. Pull up a chair.
Thank you.
This is Operation Explodable Boot. You will make your way to Budapest. Once there, you will contact our British agent, X.
X? How do you spell it?
X.
Thank you. How do I contact him?
By whistling a highly skilled, mysterious secret tune. Mm-hmm. The moment he hears it, he will hand you a sealed envelope. Heavily sealed.
But the secret tune?
It goes like this.
Wait. That's the Hungarian Rhapsody. What's secret about that?
Fool, didn't you notice? I was whistling it in English.
But being British cricket-playing footballers, they got it wrong.
Ah, Bloodlock. Switch on the radio, quick.
Right. The match is just starting.
Oh, goody.
And the
teams are just coming onto the field now. Hungary versus England.
This is the end of the Hungarians, lad.
The match was nearly called off because the British team forgot to bring their football boots. But the Hungarians sportingly gave them theirs.
No! No! Stop the match! What the No!
Other BBC radio shows are doing well, too, at home and overseas. Especially the Glums in Take It From Here, with Jimmy Edwards as the pig-ignorant father. His equally idiot son, played by Australia's Dick Bentley. And young June Whitfield.
Dad! Dad!
What's up? Come in! Ron, I wish you wouldn't shout while I'm cutting your mother's corns. Now then, where's the iodine? Oh.
Don't chide, Ron, Mr. Glum. He may not be with you much.
Eh?
Oh, you tell him, Ron.
Dad, I'm going to settle down where the pencil goes in.
You're going to... Hey, what?
Yeah.
What?
He's going to emigrate to Australia, Mr. Glum.
What? Ron, you can't do that. Your mum's cooking the supper.
Right now, Mr. Glum. Next Tuesday, he said. Oh, Mr. Glum, is he doing the right thing?
I don't know if I don't know. But I'll tell you this, Ron. I will say. Old England has still got a lot to offer. Long. Look out the window, my baby boy. Everything you see out there is mine.
I thought the red ones were mum.
And when in doubt, the BBC can always rely upon the old-fashioned quiz show, parlour game or chat show. This one is a twist on a BBC series, Any Questions, where the stars of the media and politics are invited to pontificate. And it's still going strong 35 years later. Liverpool's Derek Giler puts them all into perspective.
But this question has to do with superstition.
Well, she's right, you know.
Yeah?
About the Irish.
Yeah?
Oh, yes. I mean, only the other day, an Irishman was explaining to me how nature always compensates, like, you know.
Yeah.
Well, now, for example, if a man's got bad hearing, you usually find he's got marvellous eyesight, you see.
Mm.
Now, if he's got no sense of smell, you usually find he's got a highly developed sense of taste.
Mm.
Well, I mean, nature always compensates, you know.
Do you believe that?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, haven't you ever noticed when a man's got a short leg, the other one's always longer?
So that's the early 1950s, part old-fashioned, part very new. Young men recently demobilized from war are beginning to grow up. In comedy, we're all growing up. The Goons have learnt a lot from wartime's Itmar, and the BBC is beginning to mature as well. The script writer is at last being recognized as a necessary evil. Nothing personal about that. Our script writer would like a word, not as a writer, but as a radio and television producer.
Yes, well, Peter, I was very fortunate in that as a young radio producer, I cut my teeth on the scripts of The Goon Show, because among the Goon's crowd of friends, I met Tony Hancock. Looking back on those early days, I was obviously not yet equipped to cope with the total anarchy of the Goons, so I went with what I was sure was going to be the genius of Hancock. But he needed material, scripts to service this soaring range of talent that he had. I mean, even in those early days, you could spot it. And one of those great strokes of luck that don't happen very often in our business, the paths of one of our greatest comedy talents, Hancock, and those of two of our greatest writers of comedy, Ray Galton and Alan Simpson, met. The boys were only 20 years old when they met Tony, and we started with a few years of one-hour radio spectaculars. This is an early star bill with Moira Lister and Graham Stark. But already, you can feel Hancock and the Galton and the Simpson scripts developing.
Oh, there doesn't seem to be anybody about.
Well, knock on that door, Mark, manager.
Right you are.
Have you finished knocking on me, eh? Robin, what can I do for you?
Are you the manager?
Do I owe you money?
No.
Speak it.
My husband and I are down here for our holidays.
Oh, it is in this rat trap. Sun trap. Oh, yes, I think we can accommodate you.
What are your terms?
So last year I got 6 months for Birkenhead. Oh, yes, terms.
How much a skin you... The terms, yes. Well, we normally charge you 6 guineas a week for a double room.
How about food?
Well, that's all thrown in. It's a bit messy, but we haven't got any waiters.
Do you mean to say, sir, that you run this place by yourself?
By myself? Oh, my word, no, no. I couldn't possibly run this gigantic establishment on my top. No, no. I got Higgins.
Who's Higgins?
Higgins? Oh, he's my staff. Yes. He's been with the hotel many years as Higgins. Bit old now, you know, but passed it. He was posted there during the war. Chief of Invasion Defense Forces, he was. Oh, very responsible job. It was Higgins who saved England.
How?
Who would you think lit the beacons when the Armada come? Then of it. I expect you want to see your rooms. Are you fully insured?
Of course we are.
Yes, so we'll take a chance on the lift then. Oh, yes, we got all the mod cons here, you know, usual offices. That's it. Pile in, close the gates. Oh, yes, that's it. Right, now we'll be up there in no time. I'll just get it started. I have to shout up the lift shaft to the engineer. Pardon me.
Iggy! Second floor!
That's right. Ready? Pull!
Good night!
Higgins, oh, well done. We made 5 foot on that one, yes. And then we drop it. Take your heels in, Higgins, lad. That's it. Well done. Another 2 foot, Eve. That'll do it. Boom! Don't let go. We haven't got out yet.
And so, there it is. New ideas, new styles, exciting new young talent. The Goon Show, utterly surreal. Tony Hancock, so real that his professionalism killed him in his prime. But as they say, such is life. And that's why the childlike simplicity of some of the Goon characters are there to comfort us. Someone has hidden Dartmoor Prison. Neddy Seagoon is trying to find it.
Come on now, who's hiding our prison? Hands up, all those who know anything about this.
Me and Nickers know where he's gone, Captain.
Yeah, we know.
Splendid, lad. Tell me where it is and I'll reduce your sentence from 2 years to 4.
Well, it went, think. Where did it went? It went to Echoes.
Yeah?
Do you remember Echoes?
Oh, yeah, I remember Echoes.
Well, does he know where it went, Ed?
I'll ask him. Do you know where it went, Ed?
What does he say, Echo?
He hasn't answered yet. I'll take his out.
More Bluebottle, more Eccles, more Goons, more Hancock, and me next week.
Peter Jones say, we continue the history of radio comedy next week, next Sunday at 3:30. The programme was written and researched by Dennis Main Wilson, with additional research by Penny Gore and Ted Kendall. The producer was Andy Aliff.